Well, welcome back. This is Raylan, and I sent Rodney another message. I tried calling Rodney over the break. Rodney Stitch was going to be my guest, and he was going to give you all the pieces of information that he knows about Osama bin Laden. And the reason that he was going to talk to you is he was going to present kind of a different kind of a picture of who this Osama character really was. Oh, hey, Rodney, are you on the line now?
Righto, I'm listening to you. Hey, that sounds pretty good. Well, you know what happened? I'm on the Comcast telephone line, and apparently they must have cut a line somewhere this morning, and I didn't catch it until just about 10 minutes ago. So I'm now calling from another person's phone using the AT&T line. That's
yes.
Why I was unaware when I was waiting for your call. Sorry about that.
Well, that's okay. I did send you a couple of emails, and we actually tried to call that other person's phone. And and when we called it, we got all lines are busy also. So it was very interesting. Well, Rodney, I've given a pretty good introduction to you last hour. Maybe I need to introduce you this hour because we probably have a bunch of new listeners. I am talking with Rodney Stitch, who has probably, in my opinion, has done the most investigative reporting of anyone on Earth today. He started out as an FAA investigator, and he quickly realized that United Airlines was not safe to fly, so he wrote a book called The Unfriendly Skies, and then, strangely enough, all hell came down on him. And he found himself in contempt of court and thrown in jail. And guess who happened to be one of his buddies in jail at that time? But my husband, Gunter Rusbacher. And so Rodney and Gunter started swapping stories, and suddenly they became best friends. And Rodney, I'm going to let you take it from there. How did you meet all of these various CIA operatives? Was Gunter the one that introduced you to them, or how did it come by that you suddenly had all of these prisoners who were your informants, and you were writing book after book after book after book? How did that come to be?
Okay, let me give you a little basic introduction getting to that point, and then if we have time, I'll go into a extremely serious situation that involved a former mafia soldier who was a confidant to Al-Qaeda's primary bomber. Anyhow, that will be an extremely serious subject. But let me go into the beginning now. First of all, you know, I was a Navy pilot in World War II. I was a patrol plane commander. And then after that, I was an international airline captain. And I spent quite a bit of time in the Middle East also, flying Muslims all around to the holy cities of Mecca and Medina. So I'm familiar with the Middle East pretty well at a time when, before U.S. politicians started screwing it up. But I eventually left the airlines and went with the Federal Aviation Administration. And I was probably one of the most experienced pilots they had. They didn't get very many airline pilots there. But anyhow, after about a year in there, and this is at a time when airline disasters were a common, almost every few months, occurrence. And United Airlines had more crashes than all the other airlines together for a number of years. So they asked me to take over the assignment and clean up the situation. Well, the problems were extremely serious at United Airlines, and in some areas it was criminal. It was something I'd never encountered with all my many years of experience. But it wasn't only in the a small group at United. It was also the Federal Aviation Administration, the same problems that were in the financial regulatory agencies were and are in the government aviation safety offices. except instead of it being financial consequences, it's a very deadly consequence. But anyhow, when I discovered what I did, even though one group asked me to clean it up, the more powerful group in the FAA did everything possible to block me. And I contacted members of Congress. I circumvented the Department of Justice and appeared before a federal grand jury in Denver. Finally, I said, well, I've got to do something unusual. So I used the law in such a way I acted as an independent prosecutor. And this resulted in several months of trial proceedings, similar to a criminal proceedings, but we had an administrative law judge here. And during this hearing, I was able to provide a lot of documents. But anyhow, during the hearing, there were three more major air disasters, each one due to the same problems I had repeatedly reported and which they repeatedly blocked from being corrected. In one of these, Salt Lake City crash, the National Transportation Safety Board gave the three primary causes of the crash and the deaths, but as usual, they left out the enabling causes, which was misconduct in government. But at any rate, the hearing resulted in a cover-up, after which I was transferred to Oklahoma City, and while there, I became friends with the head of the Sky Marshal program, which is similar to like a TSA today. But I described to him what I found, and he was so concerned, he co-signed a report with me, which was about a 200-page report, to an administrator. Well, that was followed by a cover-up. Well, anyhow, I left government, and I did a number, since the crash has continued, I said, well, Jesus, I got to do something here. So I did several things. One, I published the first of my books in 1978, which is Unfriendly Skies. Then I filed federal actions in federal court under the federal crime reporting statute. And that says anyone who knows of a federal crime must report it to a federal judge or the federal officer. Well, I couldn't report it to members of Congress or Department of Justice because they already covered up for it. So I figured, well, I'll make a record of it. And what happened there is the Department of Justice filed a motion to dismiss, and I lacked standing. Well, that's, of course, a lot of baloney. Anybody has standing, you better use it if you know of a crime. But anyhow, orders were rendered forever barring me access to the federal court. Well, about this time, I was learning of more corruption. So when I sought to report that, they charged me with criminal contempt of court. Now, that's kind of, in a way, hilarious and also tragic. Because what I was trying to report were the problems in the government safety agencies already responsible for a number of crashes and which would eventually play a major role in 9/11, though nobody seems to have addressed that. So, and then I was also trying to report some of the corruptions in the FBI. So anyhow, I was now charged by FBI, by federal prosecutors who were themselves involved and then judged by federal judges who were also involved in covering up. And so they, at the age of about, I think I was about 68 at that time, and just recovering from quadruple open heart surgery, I end up in the pokey, of which 2 months were in solitary confinement, and try that sometime for torture. But anyhow, as I was about to be released, I met Gunter Reusbacher, and he was a fabulous individual, believe me. Over a period of years, I must have had over 100 conversations with him, almost all of which I knowingly reported with him. And these conversations were question and answer types. And Gunter was involved in more CIA operations than anyone I've ever heard of. And one of the first things he reluctantly started to mention to me was the October surprise. And then that's also a reflection on the corruption in both political parties. But nevertheless, with October surprise, he described to me the names of people that was at some of the meetings and the dates. He was very precise. If he didn't know, he would tell me. But then he was in, there was many other things he told me, and this I describe in my book, Defrauding America. And this had to do with the drug cartels, how the CIA brought the various groups together into a cartel. He knew about the CIA involvement in the bankruptcy court and a lot of other things. But and if he didn't know, he would tell me. Now, one of the things he inadvertently mentioned to me, not that he was hiding it, but as he was describing how the CIA was funding the opposition to the Soviet involvement in Afghanistan, he mentioned to me, and this I've never seen anywhere else, but since he was there, he would know. And this is, he was telling me how the CIA was funding and arming the rebels in Afghanistan. This is before the Soviets came in. And the reason the CIA, under, of course, direction of U.S. politicians, the rebels were being funded to oppose the Afghan government that was westernizing the country. And the government also had ties to the Soviet Union. Well, that doesn't make them any bad, but with our politicians and the military-industrial complex, that's justification. So it was the United States that first started all of the problems in Afghanistan that caused the Afghan government then to ask the Soviet to come in and defend. At any rate, over a period of years, thanks to Gunter and many others, and my appearances on hundreds of radio and TV shows and the books, other whistleblowers, I hate to use the word whistleblowers, corruption exposing whistleblowers came to me. These are CIA people, law enforcement people, professionals in the federal government, and even mafia guys. And one of those is especially important, and I'll get into that. But anyhow, I refer to them as my coalition of confidants, and I describe them very extensively in the website, defraudingamerica.com. Incidentally, at that website, there's over 1,000 pages, documents, or descriptions. And when I refer to some particular corruption, there's a lot of supporting documentation there. It's not just me saying it. There's enough data to where anybody reading it can understand it. One of the things, one of my confidants was the son of a famous mafia capo in New York City. And the son is Gregory Scarpa Jr. Now, Gregory Scarpa Jr. became a confidant to Al-Qaeda's primary bomber and planner, and that was Ramzi Youssef. Youssef was the mastermind behind the 1993 World Trade Center bombing and also the planner to bomb simultaneously a dozen U.S. airliners leaving Far East locations. But anyhow, Youssef was eventually caught, and he was in the federal holding facility in New York City. And between him and one of his Al-Qaeda cohorts was Gregory Scarpa, Jr. And Scarpa convinced the Al-Qaeda head, that they also were interested in harming the U.S. government. So over a period of over a year, Scarpa was receiving directly from USEF information as how to smuggle bombs on board the aircraft, and more importantly, advanced information on several major terrorist attacks. And these terrorist attacks were the major terrorist attacks the United States has suffered. And let me go into a little detail on that. Youssef told Scarpa about his group on the outside was planning to bring down a U.S. airliner departing the local New York City airport. And the purpose of that was, in their eyes, to declare a mistrial on the ongoing criminal trial against Youssef. Now, incidentally, Scarpa was providing this information all along to FBI agents, and the FBI agents thought so much of it, they even set up a fictitious mafia company in New York, whereby the Al-Qaeda member, Youssef, was able to make local phone calls to that alleged mafia corporation, and that mafia corporation then relayed the telephone messages to Al-Qaeda operatives locally and also overseas. And that went on for 11 months, incidentally. So about 2 weeks later, PWA went down. Now, on my website, I go into a lot of details, a lot of supporting evidence on that. So I won't go in. That's good for another program. But anyhow, the next series of terrorist attacks were the bombings of the U.S. embassies in Africa. And, of course, that a lot of people were killed in that. And then the final information was on the planned hijacking of U.S. airliners and flying into buildings. Now, when FBI agents received this information, now, it should have been, of course, acted upon within the Department of Justice and also given to other agencies that could defend against the proposed terrorist acts. But the information was withheld. Nothing was done with it. And the reason for that is, and again, I have there's plenty of evidence on my website on this, so it's not just me talking. Key Department of Justice personnel had planned all along to discredit the mafia individual, Gregory Scarpa Jr. He was scheduled to testify in several murder trials about the murders that his father, known as the Killing Machine, had committed with the help of and at the suggestion of a key FBI supervisor in the New York City office. So this would, of course, be very damaging to the FBI and the Department of Justice. So anyhow, high-level Department of Justice officials were planning to discredit him. So now they could not use his information because that would give him credibility. And would be given credibility in what he was about to testify to. So as a result of that, of course, we had, I think it was close to 4,000 people that were killed in that series of terrorist attacks that they knew were going to happen. And of course, then that led to a couple of wars and and that's also a good subject for another, you know. So that's a major scandal. Now, there's bigger scandals out. There's all the people who knew about it. Now, one of the things 9/11 Commission had did, they were staffed by some of the key Department of Justice people who were involved in the cover-up, previous cover-up. And, of course, the 9/11 Commission then omitted that critical explosive information. So there's a big scandal there, but even though I write books on it, like History of Aviation Disasters, another one is called Crimes of the FBI, DOJ, Mafia, and Al-Qaeda, as long as the public doesn't know about it, and the media is covering up, of course they've been doing that for 40 years, which I've been able to document, so the public doesn't know about it. So unless they make the effort to read about it and will show some courage and react to it, nothing happens. I might as well be posting this on a bulletin board in the middle of the Sahara Desert. But there's so many other deals, just like Lockerbie. I go into, right now everybody blames Libya and Libyan, the two Libyans for that. But there's so much evidence that I have, including reports from the United Nations and others, that makes absolutely clear that Libya had nothing to do with this. I'm not saying this to protect Libya. What President George Bush, that was the first one, and the Department of Justice did, they shifted the blame from the two countries that were involved in the bombing and shifted it to Libya. And the reason for protecting the people that actually were responsible for the 270 deaths was that Bush needed the involvement of Iran and Syria in a coalition to go after Saddam Hussein after he invaded Kuwait. So we have an extremely serious situation there. I didn't mean to do all the talking, Ray Allen. Let me take a break and have you.
You know, it's very interesting that you brought up Pan Am 103. Because if I'm not mistaken, it was Abu Nidal who was the actual, am I mistaken? Is it Abu Nidal? He was a Palestinian, but more than a Palestinian, he was a Palestinian communist. And he was paid by Iran.
Here's why the bomb was put on Pan Am 103. The U.S. Navy ship fired missiles at an Iranian airliner aircraft taken off out of Abadan and climbing on a civil airway. Now, I took off from that same airport many times. It's a civil airways. The airline was on a scheduled flight, and this here, the commander of that ship, recklessly, and he was identified as recklessly by other ships in the area, allowed the missile to shoot down that plane. That killed 290 people. So Iran swore, and they did this publicly, we're going to get even. Well, after Pan Am went down, they didn't have to do that anymore. The deed was done. Well, Iran paid money to the group you're referring to, and that group was based in Syria. Well, now, if the United States was to identify who they knew to be the actual bombers, and then, of course, the Iran and Syria was hosting the group, then that would eliminate the coalition that Bush needed to go after Iraq. So, but to this day, and this is part of the disinformation fed to the public, is to get support for a third war, which we're not involved in now, I feel. That's, of course, attacking Libya. We blame Libya for murdering 270 people on Pan Am 103. Unfortunately, that's not the truth. And Libyan people suffered for many years by that lie because of the sanctions the United States imposed on Libya, which affected the Libyan people. I even sent a letter, and I would never do this if I wasn't absolutely correct, but I sent a letter to the one Libyan there that was eventually convicted, apologizing for what was done to him. This is very sad.
You know, it's almost like Gaddafi agreed to take the fall for that. And well, it's almost like Osama bin Laden agreed to take the fall and become the man that was behind 9/11. And I'm wondering what...
I mentioned with Gaddafi, he offered to pay just to lift the sanctions. And they, I remember a number of statements they made that looked that they did not in any way claim they did it, but to lift the sanctions, which was costing the country and, of course, people a lot of money. So they agreed to pay. And the lawyers that were suing, they were smart enough to know all the evidence that existed. And all you've got to do is put in the Internet, Panam 103, and you'll see lots and lots of evidence from the United Nations and other people, professionals over there, that made it plain that Libya was not the guilty party.